We are the Rusted Robot Podcast. Lower your shields and surrender your minds. We will add your MP3 recordings and opinion on geekery to our own. We will adapt to embrace this culture. Resistance is futile.
It's the Borg.
Commander Adama, Cybermen, Daleks, and Cylons are fast approaching. Jump gates forming in multiple sectors, and the Doctor's nowhere to be found. What are we going to do?
Tune into the Rusted Robot Podcast at therustedrobot.podbean.com and on the iTunes Store. Sean and Bridget Vanderloo's love for all things geekery and robots are our only hope.
Oh, boy.
Get rusted today.
Robots.
Cyborgs.
Androids.
Oh my.
Rusted Robot.
You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Data Lore.
I'm Sean, from Porcupine.
And I'm Bridget, also from Porcupine, Ontario, Canada.
I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska in the good old US of A. Sean and Bridget, we hear that you guys are into podcasting, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your show and where it can be found?
Definitely. Our show is called The Rusted Robot Podcast.
So you can find us on iTunes. Just search The Rusted Robot. We're also located at therustedrobot.podbean.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us a little bit about The Rusted Robot?
Well, it's a general geek podcast where our main focus is robots because we love them. Our belief is that
everybody loves a robot.
Are those fully functional robots?
Yes.
Programmed in multiple techniques.
Yes. Those are our special favorites.
I see your about page. Sean is into collecting. He specializes in action figures on Star Trek Babylon 5. And Bridget loves gaming. The Legend of Zelda
is my favorite, yeah.
Cool. How long have you been doing this?
Oh, we started January 2nd of this year. We have 22 episodes so far.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the weather like up in Canada?
It's raining today.
Which is good, because it's getting rid of the rest of our snow and ice on the lakes.
That's right.
Ooh, you still have snow and ice, huh?
Uh-huh.
There are still some small snow banks here and there.
Okay, yes, I've never been to Canada. It's almost like a whole different country.
It's like Hoth.
Yeah, sometimes.
Most of the time.
That's true. Only 14 months a year.
But we don't live in igloos, and we don't have dog sleds.
Okay, you wanted to come on and talk about data lore.
Yeah.
Hey, I invited them on. They didn't want to come on. I had to entice them on.
Oh, you did some begging, huh?
Indeed. I have been a listener to the Rusted Robot podcast ever since, I joined in, I think, around show 8 or 9, something like that.
Yes.
And every week, every week I look forward to hear from Bridget and Sean, our favorite Canadians.
All right.
That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, come to think of it, I've never had a Canadian on my show before, so you guys have popped my Canadian, never mind. Is it okay if James and I knock out a few pieces of forum business?
Definitely.
Of course.
Okay. James, we're going to talk about the battle. Are you ready for this, sir?
Yes, I'm ready. I'm ready. We didn't actually. There's not a huge amount of feedback, right?
No.
For the battle, so we can probably get it done very quickly.
Yes, we do. Why don't you go ahead and start with Ben, Captain Proton.
Okay, well, Captain Proton posts on our forums that he states that, in my mind, the mark of a quality Trek review podcast is the ability of the host to take an awful episode and make a good pod from it. Well done, Lou and James. You two are doing a wonderful job, and I'm happy to see the show come up on the download each week. Oh, and Doc, keep driving in runs every time Lou asks a technical question. It is the highlight of each show for me, and I can't even remember what the technical question was.
Probably, well, for the battle. No, it wouldn't be the bezel functions.
No,
there's probably something I asked you, and you answered it, so I like those two, actually. It says, thank you, Ben. I'll give you two guesses where I get our style of review from. Only two guesses, yes. So, but for those who aren't figuring that out, that's going to be the Gamma and the Delta Quadrant podcasts. I said, I agree with you. I struck gold. Oh, here we go, Doctor. You ready for this?
Oh, dear. Yeah. Okay. Gushing.
Here we go. Don't blush too much. I struck gold when Dr. James asked to be part of the show. I'm the irreverent type, and he's the analytical type. I think we're a perfect match. I love giving him not only the technical and science questions, but listening to our cultural differences is fun as well, and we may do some for Canada tonight now. It seems each week I learn more about the UK life, and he learns more about the U.S. life that we'd never really otherwise hear about. And my daughter wants to talk to James about England, so after school is out for the summer, you're going to get a rare glimpse of the parts of Lou when Alexa takes the mic to ask James her questions. She likes his voice and thinks he seems like a nice guy. I, on the other hand, think he's simply the best. You are. I most likely will read this follow-up to your comment, Ben, so let me read this part on the show. Quote, James, you are terrific. I feel you and I are really starting to develop a rhythm for the show, and these last couple of months have been truly terrific. I'm glad I've met you, and I hope deep in my heart... Oh, I'm sorry, just kidding. That I have made a lifelong friend. And I hope we have. And to our listeners, this is all for you. And we love everyone who's been a part of this terrific ride. So, I'm glad the doc is on.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks, Lou. I mean, as far as I can see, but there's 163 or so more episodes to do, and then we're never going to speak again.
It could be. Either that, or by the end of season one, I might replace you, just like they did on TNG.
Will there be like some type of fan writing service so that I could get brought back for the third season?
Yes, I most likely think I'd probably hear about that on the first episode, actually. But you know what I was telling Delta Quadrant, Ben, what they need to do is come up with a season 8 of Voyager, where the fans of their podcast will come up with the scripts of the show, and they tell them all about what happens on their particular episode, and then the Delta Quadrant crew critiques their episode, just like they do in the normal one. So maybe we could do that, season 8.
Okay, why not?
Why not? All right, why don't you head on to Paul?
Yeah, I'm going to pick up from Paul. And actually, by the way, thanks for everyone that does comment on the forum every week. It's always good to hear feedback. Mm-hmm. Okay, from Paul, I'm going to try to read this out in one way or another. This episode felt more like the TNG that we know, apart from that machine that gave Picard a headache. Still, at least it was interesting. The Stargazer was a cool ship, a really nice hybrid between TOS and TNG era. Trek has always been good at that. The Enterprise C, for example. Actually, I think that's a very valid point. Mm-hmm. By the way, James, when you talk science, apparently I make Paul happy when I talk science.
Yes, right. Yeah, that'll do. Thank you. So, and then of course a doctor came back with, "I can't believe it." He requoted Paul and says, "You and me both." You don't need to explain any further, Doc. We'll let that one go.
Actually, I suspect by the time this has gone out, I would have been on Paul's show. He's having me on in this week to review E Squared on their Enterprise podcast.
Oh, nice. Okay, good. Yeah, I'm hoping to get my shipwreck tracked someday. because I listened to the last one that Brian Baker was on, and I put a comment on their forums about this because it was very difficult for me to listen to it at first, so I actually put it off. Put it off, and then finally I got to it, and I'm so glad I did. But let's go into Data Lore.
Okay. The synopsis for tonight's show is the Enterprise explores Data's home planet, Omicron Theta. They find his brother and the dark secret he carries.
Keep going.
This is the 13th episode of Season 1 of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
The original release date is January 18th, 1988.
Written by Robert Lewin and Maurice Hurley, and directed by Rob Bowman.
The guest star for tonight's episode is Biff Yeager as Chief Engineer Argyle, whom we will never see again. So long, Biff.
Yeah, so long, Biff.
Catch you later.
See ya. Riker will take the beard.
Yes.
Okay.
He's beardless in this episode.
I know. I can't wait till we get a bearded Riker.
Right.
What does everyone think of this episode? I'm going to let the guest go first. As our guest, why don't you tell us what you thought of the episode first?
I like Data episodes. They're my favorite. So as long as it's focused on Data, then I tend to like that particular episode.
And I thought it was okay. It's a first season episode, so you have to take it for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. It was okay. I wouldn't choose to watch it on a regular basis, but it is what it is.
Yeah,
I think it was a nice introduction to his brother.
Well, that's right. They said the word brother way too much, though.
Right, brother.
Right, brother.
Oh, shut up, Wesley.
Yes. Yeah.
And since I am finished on the bridge,
I just want to let you know, had this an adult said any of this, it would have been listened to.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Go to your quarters and take your mother with you. What about you, James?
Okay. I love Data. I think Data's great. There's really very little bad that I can say about Data. This is a Data-centric episode. It sets up a lot of stuff that we're going to grow to love about Data. In the, you know, and Data and Laura and the relationship between them and Soong and the rest of it. I have a soft spot for this episode. It is not great in the sense that it's still very much season one, and it also is relatively Wesley heavy, but it's still a Data episode, and I can't say bad things about it.
I'm going to echo the same thing. I do like Data. Obviously, he was the child of the ship. Not Wesley, Data. Data is the one learning about humanity, and I do like Data. However, I really don't get into lore. I don't know why. It just rubs me the wrong way, and when we get to, what is it, season 6 or season 7, when he's now the master of the Borg,
yes,
that is right. Completely ridiculous, but I'll wait and save our time for that. But that's kind of what I feel. So, all right. So we're trucking to Data's home, right?
Yep.
Well, I forgot the name of the planet. What was it?
Omicron Theta.
Okay. Data's getting ready for this visit by learning how to sneeze. Achoo!
Achoo!
How plausible was that?
Right.
He just can't get it quite right.
No.
Or he can't whistle. He can't sneeze. Huh.
He was made less perfect on purpose.
That's it. Yes. Brother. Yeah, I think, doesn't sneezing come up again later with Commander Maddox? Because sneezing, for example. No, there was some example that he gives to Commander Maddox, and I wasn't sure if it was sneezing.
Was that in Measure of a Man or Data's Day?
Measure of a Man.
Hmm.
There's an ineffable quality to being human, and I thought he comes up with something, you know, take sneezing. No, Games of Chance. That's it.
Right.
Take Games of Chance, for example. Okay, so never mind. So we get to the planet, and it's completely bare. So obviously this is the crystalline entity's work. Do you think it was odd that, who was it that said proud parents, Riker maybe, when you were looking at the children's drawing of the crystalline entity and blood and people running and dying?
Yes.
Proud. Look proud at them parents. Go.
Right.
Isn't that nice?
didn't he miss something in the drawing? Just, I don't know if that's proud parents. That's more like dead parents.
Yeah. Right. But Data is programmed with all of their memories.
Right.
So he has no memory of the crystal entity because it was after the fact?
It was. Mm-hmm. He was taken apart. But he
was...
Something I got confused about is that when did they have time to do the drawing of the crystalline entity and then running for their lives?
I wondered the same thing.
While they were being
actually.
Fried, yeah.
We all had that same thought at that exact moment. I was just going to ask, when did they find time to do that? Because they were dying.
Hurry, get little Timmy to draw on the wall.
Come on, Timmy, hurry, Timmy, Sally, hurry, Sally. We ain't got time. Maybe one picture was incomplete because they did die.
Right.
That makes sense.
Very good point, Doc. Okay.
Well, it made me wonder whether or not the crystalline entity was supposed to have come twice or something, because that's the only way really you would have got a picture of it drawn by a child. Mm-hmm. And something that I didn't necessarily buy into straight away is that it's something along the lines of what 20 years since Data was picked up from the planet,
like 26, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and. No one's been back since?
Right, and the crystalline entity's just been hanging around all this time.
Hanging around in orbit.
Yes.
Yeah.
It obviously consumes planets, but I assume it doesn't consume a planet and then has had enough for 2 decades just to hang around. I mean...
right.
It was a good meal. Mm-hmm. He was really full.
Plus, how did the crystalline entity know that Laura was being put back together again? I mean, how does crystalline entity show up so fast after Lore, is put back together? It makes no sense.
No, it doesn't.
So,
and who initiated the contact to begin with? I mean, right at the beginning when the Lore would have sold out the colony to the crystalline entity.
Mm-hmm.
How do you stumble across a crystalline entity while you're on a planet? I didn't get that.
That's another good point. If the crystalline entity destroyed Dr. Soon, or they presume he was destroyed, right? Am I right in that or not?
No, that's supposed to, yeah.
Yeah, they don't know what happened to him.
Right, they assume that he's gone.
So who disassembled Lore and put him into pieces in a now functioning, I don't want to call it the data center. I mean, after all these years, the power's still running on all this equipment.
Right. There's a few plot holes in this episode.
Nah, it's perfect the way it is. Okay. All right. So I've already got the proud parents thing. And Data holds the memories of all the colonists?
But not their day-to-day experiences, unfortunately. Just their accumulated knowledge somehow.
I've never quite understood what that means. I don't know what that's...
No, you're right. They don't explain it at all.
I mean, is that just this dude knew how to work, a piece of technology, and Data knows how to do it, or it didn't, the fact he didn't know the memories, I didn't quite get what they were getting at with the with he possessed some knowledge of all the colonists,
and he still doesn't get humor,
right? But if he didn't have the day to day experiences of the colonists, how does he have the logs of I can't think of his name in the future.
The mom that destroyed the entity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He has his journals. Can you speak to me in his voice? That'd be great.
That's right.
Rennie, that's it, Rennie. Because I just flashed in my head. I did it all for you, Rennie. Anyway.
Wow, that's a good memory.
Yeah. So I mean. He did have the memories of a girl that Rennie liked, too. Data wants to assemble the stored android and get this going, so he gives Chief Argyle to give it a try. Do you think it's a really good idea to assemble an android that... Maybe we could just, turn his head on and not give him any body parts at this moment to make sure he's not psycho?
Yeah, it would be prudent.
It was very important to Data to learn whether or not he could assemble him. Mm-hmm. It was very important to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
but they couldn't figure it out. They needed those little flashlight wand things.
That's my next point. They all look at the new android like a monkey doing a math problem. I mean, you know, the parts looked very plug and play. You just snap them together.
Right. Yeah. We mentioned that actually when we were watching it again. We talked about, doesn't it look like the head just kind of plops on? I mean, how complicated is this?
I mean, we have USB ports today. We didn't have USB ports in 1987, but or 1988, but still, Data's big secret. He has an off switch or an Android alarm clock. Okay.
When they have Law in pieces on, you know, trying to put them back together, and you know, everyone's right, there are about 8 pieces, and it's clear which places go where. Mm-hmm. Am I the only person that thought that really, you know, whatever, despite what Data says, it's pretty clear that Law wasn't fully functional, right?
Well, we just saw his bum.
Yeah.
I think he looked to be missing stuff, unless they left that down on the planet.
That's why he's so mad.
Maybe Data altered his programming.
So he's not fully functional then.
Yeah. When Dr. Soong created the second version, which would be Data, or who knows, could be B4 for all I know. That's another thing that really irks me is B4. But Data was created second, so obviously he said, you know, wouldn't it be interesting and if I gave him one of these?
Well, that's good for Yar later on in the future.
Oh, absolutely. But,
you know,
I was just thinking right now when you said that, why doesn't Yar wonder about Lore? I wonder if he's as fully functional.
Right.
Maybe she should have come on to him, too, and see what happens.
Well, she does question if we can trust Data.
And certainly at the beginning when, Lore's believes, well, he puts across the lie that he's like the upgrade of Data. So Yar must be thinking, hey, I got to get me some of that upgrade. Mm-hmm. See what improvements were made.
Yeah, I believe it's called Orgasm 2.0.
That's right.
Beta test. Okay. All right. Did anybody laugh at the Android alarm clock?
Yeah, that was kind of silly.
It was silly, but that's okay. So we have some bashful questions to ask. Does it have all your parts? Will we know how to turn it on? Did it seem like the writing was a little heavy-handed with the it thing?
Just a little bit.
Actually, I think, unfortunately, this... I mean, we've been obviously reviewing Season 1, and Season 1 is pretty clunky, and it's also... A lot of the writing for Data is also pretty clunky. They overplay how much of a robot man he is, and they make it that, you know, he doesn't speak in the right way, and certainly not how he becomes to be written for later. I think that this episode, despite being very much Data-centric, I think you do go back a little bit in terms of a couple of months in terms of the development of Data. I think you're basically just picking up Data as if you had him from the pilot. And I think that a lot of the writing is very clunky on that side. Mm. You know, the it and you know, it's now decreed that Data can't use contractions and has difficulty assimilating things. And whereas last week, when we were looking at the big goodbye, it was, you know, very keen to use as much slang and colloquial language as he possibly could get hold of.
Right. I would guess that there'd be some kind of subroutine in Lore's programming that would allow him to do contractions, so why don't they just find it and give it to Data?
Shouldn't be that hard.
Mm-mm. But as we know, as it goes on, there will be a few slip-ups of the writing. He'll use contractions when he's not supposed to.
Right.
I mean, he actually uses one right at the end of the episode when he's asked whether he was okay, and he states, I'm fine. I believe it's I'm fine, but he does use a contraction right at the end. You know, in the final shot to prove that he's not Law, he uses a contraction.
Right. To prove he's not Law. Okay. So the off switch, huh? Who's fooling who? Witten Argyle figure out the off switch? Or about anybody else in the room? Do you think it's an off switch that you could see? Or is it you have to push into his back to actually feel the lump?
That's what I'm thinking. It's like a hidden by a skin flap, maybe something like that.
I thought it would be like a series of different keys that you would have to know specifically what they are in order to turn them. Because it seems to me just an off switch is a little too simple to turn off this high tech piece of technology.
Yeah,
you said he didn't want to accidentally knock your off switch.
Right. Well, oh, so yeah.
You don't want him to lean against the wall and to switch himself off.
Right. Whoops.
Or in the middle of a fight, somebody hits his off switch. That's true. So when Dr. Crusher, when Beverly had his chest cavity open and he had Laura's open at the same time, she closes up Data's chest and actually uses some kind of surgical tool to seal it. Now, isn't in future episodes, isn't Data where you just push a certain part and it pops open?
That's right. Mm. And why was Dr. Crusher involved in all? She's not. She's not an android doctor.
Mm-mm. No, maybe you have to have a real doctor to do the surgical part of opening and closing.
Maybe.
And if so, she wasn't in her full sterile surgical gear.
That's true.
I guess you don't need that, really.
He wouldn't get an infection.
No. Oh, maybe he can simulate one.
Right.
Okay, so let me see here. I've got in my notes, what is Lore's initialization process? You know, how does he boot up?
Yeah, he just kind of opens his eyes when they're talking about him.
All you got to do is ask, well, under which one was created first, and he's ready.
That's the magic question.
Mm-hmm. So from that point on, I guess the real trick is just to get Lore to shut up.
That's right.
Yes.
Now, I have to say, I think Brent Spiner does a fairly decent job, right, at playing both, you know, both brothers of the androids. I've watched this episode many, many times. I know what happens and all the rest of it. But I think there is a difference between Data, Lore, and then also Lore playing Data. And I think there's a very obvious difference between all of those three states. And I think he does well. I think he's always consistent in how that is portrayed across the episode. And then when you throw into that the fact that at this point they would have been using, you know, pretty primitive kind of a split screening to get him to interact with himself. Mm-hmm. I actually think that, you know, we're watching this 25 years later, and I think it actually is pretty decent.
I'd agree with that. You really do believe that it's two separate actors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering that too. I didn't see the split-screen thing.
That's what I like about Lore episodes, though, is it shows Brent Spiner's ability to act. Because it's really convincing.
And I'd have to go a bit further, and I do have to say I like it when you then throw Dr. Soon into the mix as well.
That's a fantastic episode.
I mean, I like, you know, I like when they both turn up with brothers, and then I also like when Soon turns up in Birthright when he, you know, Data starts to dream. I the more Brent Spiner I can get, the better. Usually, actually, I'm about to put a. I'm actually going to just say he goes a bit too far when you get to things like Masks, when he does about 60 different characters in an episode with funny voices. But when he's the Soon family, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Well, I like the there's a Picard Data discussion at some point in the episode where they question why Data was necessarily made as a human form. So Picard kind of goes with the theory that, well, you know, because you function just as good as a human does. And Data turns to him and he says, better in some cases. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because when at some point we have a discussion where we talk about androids, robots, and cyborgs. And androids are typically depicted as either equal or superior to humans.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In most cases, including Data.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I got that Picard didn't quite like that answer.
Right. I'm better than you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're not a Picard, Data. You didn't come from the vineyards in Lavar, France.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, Picard is troubled with Lore calling Data imperfect, and I wondered why. Does Picard really consider Data to be perfect? And like you say, in some ways, Data says he's more perfect than humans.
Right.
Okay, so Data swears an allegiance to Picard and to Starfleet. But of course, we all knew that.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't expect anything less from our Data. Mm-mm.
Why do you think everybody is trying to give Lore a lesson in ship functions?
Yeah, that like didn't really make any sense.
No, like, he was kind of not smart when he was first turned on. I mean, even Wes gets into it. We're like, you'll see.
It's almost like in Space Seed where they give Khan all the technical manuals.
Mm-hmm. That is something that turns up a little bit later on in the episode where Data, or at least he should have suspicions about Lore because, you know, he's trapped him. But the Riker test, you know, he saw through that and, you know, he's beginning to be a bit suspicious of Lore. And then Lore basically asks, do you mind if staying in the quarters with access to your computer database just to do stuff? Mm-hmm. And yeah. Data says, sure, knock yourself out.
Mm. Look at all our files. No.
Oh yeah, Lore was brilliant at playing dumb. Absolutely brilliant. And you know, looks like Riker tried to stump him with his, what was it, Doc? What was the question? Hyperboles or?
No, it was just about, it was the hypotenuse of a right angle triangle.
There you go. Something like that.
The square of the side being equal to the sum of the square of the other two sides. Okay. 10-year-olds learn that.
Really?
Of course they do.
I've never heard of any of that, so. But anyway, that was our first chance to figure out that it's a fake!
He's bad.
Yeah, he's a bad man. So Data even tells Lore Riker's question was a trick to get Lore to show he knows more than he's let on. And Lore says he will be more careful from now on. Now, why? You know, shouldn't Data have reported that? Captain, he knows more than he's let on, and he says he's going to be more careful in the future.
Well, yeah, that he should. He should report that.
There goes his allegiance to Starfleet.
Right.
Okay.
That lasted a whole 5 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say blood is thicker than water, but no. What is it that he has?
Well,
biochemical nutrients?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
That's thicker than water.
That's right.
So we learn that Lore can laugh, he can lie, he can tell bad jokes, he can hurt people physically, and he tries to get Data to turn against the ship. What a guy.
A real upstanding citizen.
Yes, wasn't one of Dr. Soon's best work. Then again, you know, at one point, if you think about it, I'm flashing ahead here, they thought Data was the only Soon-type android in existence. Then we find out Lore comes along. Then we find out that Data's mother was actually an android as well. Yeah. And then we have B4.
They're just all over the place.
It makes you wonder how many other androids are out there that we don't know about. Maybe Dr. Soon sent some to the past. We could have androids among us.
You never know.
Do you ever drive your car around and you think to yourself, I wonder if anybody in this traffic jam here is an android?
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Darnest thing.
I can't help but think that, man. And one day I'm going to expose it. I'm trying, but I keep getting arrested for it.
You're not trying hard enough.
Exactly. You're an android. I know you are. Okay, so, like you said, Data has to go to work and leaves his new pet in his quarters. Of course, you know, is he housebroken? No. But instead of peeing on the floor or ripping up the chairs, he downloads records. What kind of internet security do they have on the Enterprise that they don't know what Lore is doing?
Very poor security is my answer.
Mm. Must
they didn't update their malware.
Right, I was just thinking.
Terrible.
They must have subscribed to the Obamacare website. Doc, you're quiet. You didn't fall asleep. I know it's almost midnight.
No. We're going strong here.
Yes, we are. Yeah, I'm trying to get through because I don't want you to have to stay up too late.
Oh no, don't be ridiculous. This is great. By the way, I think this is really the first time, right, that we're told that Data was created by Dr. Soon. You know, and at the beginning of the episode, it even the conversations between Geordi and Co on the planet, and then you know what then transpires later with Lore and Data. It doesn't appear to me that people are are aware that that Soong would have created these guys. So I think it's really only this episode that kind of confirms that these guys were created by Dr. Soong. Now the weird thing about that, of course, because Soong was supposed to get there under false documents. They didn't exactly know where he was. They thought he was a laughing stock. He was effectively ostracized from the scientific community. When we eventually meet Dr. Soong, we realize that he looks like Data.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have been a bit weird that you have the lead-in cyberneticist try to build robots. He then fails. He then goes off for a couple of years, and then out of nowhere, all these robots that look like him start appearing. That they must have had a hunch that this, that Dr. Soong would have been responsible for these guys.
I've never thought of that before, actually, until you just mentioned it. That's a great point.
Oh, I don't want to ruin the episode, though.
That's it. You did it.
I mean, having said that, we've been watching all of, obviously we're watching season one. I mean, halfway through now, season one. And, a lot of the stuff isn't great. A lot of stuff's quite clunky. A lot of the stuff isn't quite formed yet. But I rewatch a lot of this stuff, and I think it wasn't good, but it was great to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, that's really probably what sums up most about even this episode. It's not good, but it's great.
Okay. So what do you guys think of Tasha's question? How much can we trust Data now?
Well, she is security chief, so it's probably good she asked it, but...
And for the information on anyone who's on the bridge, that was a legitimate security question.
Yes. Yeah, so anyone listening to this podcast, that was a legitimate question. because everybody starts to look at each other like, ooh, I can't believe she said that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that's her job.
Okay. So, Lore spikes a drink for Data. Champagne to celebrate Lore trying to give the ship to the crystalline entity. Did anybody buy the whole idea that Data got his got a roofie?
Yeah.
I mean, he hit him with some GHB, the date rape drug. I mean, does anybody buy that?
And he just happened to have it with him.
Yeah.
That was the plan all along, yeah.
Where did it come from?
Must have replicated it.
And the computer didn't realize that he's giving him the GHB?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, he doesn't quite rape him, but he does abuse him when he was out. Kicks him in the head.
That's right.
That was violent. That was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, Data is tough. He had to kick him 3 times to get a cut on his head.
The little
opening.
Data port or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Data port. Get it? Mm-hmm. See what I did there?
Data port.
Ooh, oh. You can use that anytime you like.
Yes, I may have to put it.
Oh, seriously?
Sagras. Bad applause.
Yeah, right. Yeah, once in a while when if it takes us a long time to, if I ask a question that stumps the doctor, I'll put in cricket noise.
Oh, nice.
Because first, he has to process, why in the hell is he asking me this stupid question? Oh, wait, I know why. So, okay.
There's also a time... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, there's also a time delay between, when you say it out in the US and by the time it gets to me. So, it's if there's a gap, it's not always that I'm stumped. It's just a time delay.
Or maybe it's the queen going through what I'm saying and deciding what you get to hear or not.
Possibly.
You know how they are at Buckingham Palace.
That's
Have you guys heard any of the Lou Trek show? Because we do something called News from the Future, and you'd be surprised what I've done to that poor queen. Queen Liz was still in power till she finally died for the 75th time. Because every time she dies, they keep bringing her back to life. They do CPR for up to 2 weeks, 3 weeks at a time, and she bounces back. And laughs about this latest brush with death. I tell you, it's gone on for over a year that I bring the Queen out once in a while, but nope, she's finally dead.
Really? I hadn't heard.
Yeah, Queen Liz. That's what her servants call her. I don't know what. Right. What do you guys call her, Doc?
Hey, it's not just me. But I have fellow fellow countrymen on the line who are also subjects under Her Majesty.
Yes, we are. That's right. We worship her daily.
I'm sorry. Canada is subject to the Queen?
It's part of the Commonwealth.
Absolutely.
She is considered the head of our state, the head of state for us.
A law is not an official law unless it's stamped by the Queen first.
Wow, Ben. How do you like that? I learned something new today, too.
Yep.
Wow. I had no idea.
She's on all our coins.
Really?
Yep, she's on all our coins.
And by the way, Lou, we're coming back to take you guys soon enough, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We're taking it back.
It's been 200 years in the making, but it's happening. Yeah. We thought you should know.
The secret plan is about to be released.
Okay, well, you know, what confuses me is the whole dollar versus pound thing. So if I had as many dollars as if I do have pounds, I'd be a rich bastard. But that's a different story again. Okay, so anyway, Worf detects data using the subspace radio, so Riker sends Wesley to look into it.
Right!
Go check it out, boy.
Go send the little guy.
Send the little guy with absolutely no training, no security training, no self-defense training, no chance to go find out what's going on.
And when he gets there, he can tell almost right away that it's not Data, it's Lore. Actually says something about it, so that proves his extensive training right there, and just gets out of the quarters. I'll go report this to the captain now.
Yeah, and he goes back up to... they put him in the ops position today. Yeah.
Yeah, he was fitting in for Data, because Data was generally aloof and wandering the ship. Yeah. With his evil brother.
He had family concerns.
Right. Yeah, so Wes walks in and finds... Go ahead.
No, so, but actually Wesley does a... You know, he actually does a good job, right? He goes and finds out, he gets the information, he then relays it back, and he basically gets mocked for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way the episode is written is that basically every single adult on the show turns into a moron, and everyone bigs up Wesley for... being able to recognize the blatantly obvious, even as Lore is, telling everyone his evil plan about how he's going to destroy the Enterprise, it's almost as if people have taken, stupid pills. And I think that's, it's episodes like this that I think give Wesley a bad name. Not per se anything that Wesley does, but how stupid the senior crew is written in order to allow Wesley to kind of, take the glory.
Right. It's almost like the way Voyager treats the holographic doctor. He isn't real, right. So obviously nothing he says really matters to us. Same with Wesley. It kind of reminds me of some of my daughter's TV shows, those teenage junk shows where the teens are all the smart ones and the adults are all the buffoons.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, even Data can figure out that he uses a contraction. We've been using the sensors instead of we have. If I didn't know any better, I might think you were Lore. I've been practicing his facial tic. Do I have it down?
Why would you want to?
Exactly. No, I think you might not want to do that.
He's his brother.
Okay. Now, let me ask you guys a question. Do you think Data got his facial tick generator or reliever from the quartermaster? I mean, do they hand those out standard issue?
One on every deck.
Mm. So Data's got the one for deck whatever?
Deck 8, maybe?
Yeah. Is that where he's at?
I know Riker's on deck 8, so that's...
Are they neighbors?
They might be.
Might have borrowed his Riker's tick fixer.
Ah! Yes. That's it! Maybe Riker uses it for something else.
We don't even want to know. Just hope he cleans it after.
Data, use that on his face.
Yeah, exactly. Data, don't use it on your face. Do you know where that's been?
You don't know where that's been.
Jeez, what did Riker do? Okay. Okay, we do a lot of tangents sometimes, but... You know,
really?
Yeah, sometimes we do. But I've never had one that came in on a 5 o'clock bogey.
Yeah, really.
What was that whole 5 o'clock bogey tangent thing, Doc?
Sorry, what was the quote? I thought that there was just a 5 o'clock bogey.
Yeah.
When Geordi said it.
Yeah, I think it was a bogey coming in on a 5 o'clock tangent. I just turned it
off. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, because that's what happens. We have a bogey. I've never heard of a bogey before.
Well, they don't talk like that on Star Trek.
No.
I mean, we have something coming. And it's amazing their subspace camera that can see, you know, light years ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can see the crystalline entity coming at them. How, it makes you wonder how the crystalline entity can achieve warp.
Yeah, that's not really explained either.
I mean, or indeed communicate over subspace.
You can identify me as the life form Data.
Yes. It's your old friend. Well, see, here's another thing that I was wondering about. In a future episode, isn't it that the Callisto, that the crystalline entity can overpower and destroy all life forms, including the seeds and their greenery? But yet the Enterprise shields could withstand the attack. What do you guys think of that?
Well, it's the flagship. It's the Enterprise.
The Callisto was an alien ship, wasn't it?
I don't recall, actually.
I think it may have been, and that might explain why maybe they didn't have shields. They only have low-limited particle weapons. Do you know what this thing is? I mean, it was kind of like an Indian sound when he was talking to the captain of the Callisto.
And actually, by the way, I'm gonna stick up for the crystalline entity here for a second, because I think as far as weird kind of threats go, I think it's interesting enough. I know it's not, you know, there are obviously plot holes. It shouldn't be going at warp. It shouldn't be hanging around the planet for 27 years waiting to come back. It shouldn't be able to communicate with lore and whatnot. But I think it's, you know. I quite liked it. I liked the design of it. It obviously is reminiscent somewhat of the Planet Eater from a Doomsday Machine. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something interesting. I kind of prefer them to meet things like this than just to meet like unidentified spaceship number 2 or so. Mm. So I at least like where they were trying to go, maybe, or trying to give it a different flavor.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm getting no backing behind that at all, right?
No, I can get behind that 100%.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a very nicely drawn thing. Why have we never heard about it till now?
And where's it been the last 3 decades?
Yeah. Maybe it was like Nero. Maybe it was Nero, like yes. Nero, you know, he just hung around for a few hundred years. Okay. Well, anyway, do you guys think that maybe Riker and Picard might have been kind of idiots?
Yeah, I mean, they missed their morning coffee.
Oh, absolutely. Because they go into Data's quarters, and Laura's got this, if he senses anybody near us, he may go off on us, and he's pressing his back. He senses you! Get out! I'll record everything he says!
Because that's the Data we know and love.
Yeah. If I was Riker, I'd have said bull.
And the way that he was kind of holding, well, the way that Law was holding Data and kind of, you know, a bit like a mannequin, pretending that he was getting angry and violent, it wasn't convincing.
No.
It wasn't convincing at all. Riker's certainly on the stupid pills today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you see Data on the floor go, he senses you. He's getting angry. He's going to take it out on me.
Look out.
Okay, so Data, or I make that lore, can talk to the crystalline entity. He knows crystal talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Crystallese.
Yeah. You never told me you could do that. Oh, I think Picard was the one who said, you never told me you could do that.
Yeah, it was Picard. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Surprise, Captain.
You never asked, sir.
It's something we never came up in our poker game. Maybe it did come up in the poker game, but Captain never joined him till the last minute.
That's right.
Okay, now, Laura's idea was to, let me see if I get this right. We're going to beam up a small tree and then transport it out and blow it up, right? So the question becomes, where does this small tree come from? They're not near a planet. Where are they going to beam this small tree up from?
I think they were just going to create it out of the matter stream, like a replicator.
Oh, replicate a small tree and then blow it up to show them how tough we are?
That's the impression I got.
That sounds like a good plan.
Well, let's do it then.
And in fairness, it was a large tree, not a small tree.
Oh, was it a large tree?
Yeah.
It was.
Well, that would make us tougher.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, we don't want to look like wimps. We're the Federation.
Right. You don't want to put out a little shrub or anything.
Because, I mean, the ability to destroy a tree is clearly, it's something to be reckoned with.
We are strong.
We can do trees.
Good one. All right. And then, of course, Worf gets clobbered pretty easily in the turbo lift, doesn't he?
Yeah, that was sad.
That was quite a groan on him.
And then the way he melted down the turbo lift wall.
Yes. Yeah. I'm surprised the turbo lift didn't swing and hit the wall as it was going down. Oh, no, it was locked, or emergency stop.
Sorry, I think it's always, growing up watching TNG, you know, I was probably 10 or so, my favorite character would have been always Data. I loved Data, and I always loved seeing Data actually, you know, start knocking people around. I love the way that he overpowers Worf, despite the fact the actor must be at least 6 inches shorter than Worf when they stand, and I love the way that, you know, Data just knocks him to pieces. That's always been, you know, something nice to see. In this case, obviously, it's because he's evil Data. Whenever there's the show of strength, it's always always great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, definitely.
I wasn't sure if looked like Worf had a little bit of fear in his eyes when he got that emergency stop. Oh, shoot. What have I done? Okay. So now we're in the cargo bay, and we have Dr. Crusher and the phaser, which really, they were both useless in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
So how did they go from having a phaser drawn on him to him taking the phaser off Crusher? That's astonishing, right?
Well, there's another one just like that. But he gets the phaser, and he says he's going to turn her little man into a torch. So I think what we all need to do now is have a moment of silence so we can all imagine Wesley as a torch.
Oh, sorry, silence.
That's okay. It's a good thing to laugh, because we had another episode on the Lou Trek Show of we killed off Wesley Crusher in well over 100 different ways.
Oh, really?
Oh, everything from a shotgun blast to the face. I think we even fed him to the crystalline entity.
Nice.
Yes. Beam him out and let the crystalline entity have him. Yeah, I'll try and go to lutrekshow.com and look for a thing at the top called Simplified Show List, and you'll have a list of past shows and what they were.
Definitely.
Okay, so when Laura drops his... You were asking about how does the phaser get from Crusher to Lore. Here's another thing. When just after Beverly starts running for the door, you see Lore drop his hands and look up to the ceiling. Oh, thank you, Doctor Soon. Wouldn't that have been a great moment for Data to jump him?
Perfect opportunity.
But you don't interrupt an evil guy during his monologue, right?
No.
No,
it's just not done.
No, I guess not.
Against the rules.
And then we see Dr. Crusher getting shot in the arm.
With the flames.
Yeah, I was going to ask him, what was the deal with the flames?
Oh, boy.
One piece of jacket's all on fire.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. I've never seen anybody get shot and start on fire.
And you never will again.
Right. I mean, we do see someone's head explode.
Yes.
Can't wait for that. It's like the pinata, you know. Lots and lots of non-candy stuff came out. Okay. Now, this was done in 1987. There were no DVDs, right?
That's right.
So nobody could do frame by frame unless you do it on a VCR, and it was very terrible at the time. So has anybody ever seen Data stand-in?
No.
Okay, so when Data jumps him, jumps Lore, that's when obviously you get the stand-in, and it's pretty obvious. Very, very obvious.
Wow. Hmm. We should go back and check that out.
We will.
Yes. Okay, I've got a couple more things here. One is, what do you guys think was the rationale of having Lore just drift in space?
Torture. Eternal torture.
Well, because it wouldn't power him off or anything.
He wouldn't power off.
No.
He doesn't need oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't get cold.
Mm. No.
He wouldn't starve.
No.
He'd feel no pain.
Right.
And there's no resistance. So he would just basically twirl and twirl and twirl and twirl forever.
Essentially.
And the good thing about being up, you know, being left in that position is that you know full well that it won't be long before Son picks him up and he comes back to, you know, to menace the crew again.
Right.
Well, probably about 3 years or so, I'd guess.
Or so. Because, you know, Crusher says, or Wesley says, you know, he's gone permanently. No, he's not. So he just floats in space singing Humpty Dumpty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, now, my last thing I have, unless you guys have more, is they're overdue for their computer refit. Really?
They just launched 6 months ago. How could they already be overdue?
So I'm wondering if the computer refit is a thing about 11001010110.
Is that the next episode?
No, it's a little bit down the line, but...
Okay.
So I'm wondering if maybe if it was going to be one of the next episode, or it's supposed to be the next episode, that could explain why they would need a refit.
True.
It's, so 11001001 is two episodes away from here. And some crazy, they mentioned something about this in an earlier episode as well, I think. I think they mentioned that they were on course to do an upgrade to the computer. So I do think it is a reference to that episode.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, well, that's pretty much what I have. If anybody have any other observations you want to pull up that we haven't discussed?
I don't think so. They just say brother way too much.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
Kind of got on my nerves.
There's some brotherly love.
Okay, then. Let's see here. Let me go back.
And although it's not, although it's not fair to blame it on this episode because it clearly was not written at the time, I don't see how this kind of origin story of Data in any way fits into B4 and what they do in Nemesis.
Mm.
I always felt that the Data Lore relationship and how that came to be. I thought that was good the way it was. I didn't see the need to introduce, multiple versions, 1 through 9 of evil Data that will appear as and when needed.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I'd agree with that.
Okay.
So maybe, can I ask, Lou, can I ask a question of our guests while we have them?
Sure, but I just was thinking about Lore being the Borg Queen later.
Pardon me?
Well, there's an episode where Lore is pretty much the leader of the Borg, so I was just saying he's a Borg Queen later.
Oh, okay. I know what you mean now. I really like that episode.
Do you?
Yeah, I really do. I have fond memories of. It's very very clear in my mind when I first watched that. It was when just cut a long, boring story short. It was when I kind of got back into Star Trek after not having been able to watch it for around 9 months because we didn't have a satellite television at the time. It was one of the first VHS tapes I bought. Mm. It's Timescape, and you know, Descent Part 1 is on that. And I didn't, you know, but back in the day, you didn't know what storylines were coming up. You weren't spoiled with, you know, oh, the Borg are going to return at the end of the season, or mm-hmm. you know, Lore's going to return, and so on. And unless I'm very much mistaken and my memory's playing tricks with me, Lore appears only in the very, very, very final scene of that episode. So you see these like ultra aggressive Borg, and you don't know why it's happening. And right at the end, it's you know, Lore's behind it, and I thought that was fantastic.
Okay,
at least part one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll see. We'll get there someday, maybe. Okay.
Indeed. So I had questions for our guests.
Oh yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
If I can. So sure. Sean and Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously do a podcast about, you know, androids, robots, and cyborgs, and all of the rest of it.
Oh my!
Mm-hmm. Oh my! Where do you feel that the Star Trek, like androids and the rest of it, fit in to the you know, to the wider kind of group of androids? You know, how do you think Star Trek does it? Right? Do you think it has, you know, it has a wide variety of how these, you know, the various automatons and whatnot are portrayed? You know, what is your opinion on Star Trek's take for, you know, artificial life?
Well, I'd have to say that they do it pretty well, except for the original series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we go back to What Are Little Girls Made Of? And what's the other one there with the mud planet with all the multiple copies?
iMud.
Yeah, iMud.
iMud. That's great.
That's it.
Yeah, because they're all controlled by Norman, and Kirk can just talk them to death. So they're not really androids at all.
That's where there's a portrayal where androids are not depicted as equal or superior.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then we have Data, we have the exocomps, we have
the Borg,
we have the Borg, we have the Doctor. He's a AI.
Yeah.
So I think they're top notch.
Me too.
We even have Reginald Barclay.
Well, that's right. He's pretty
becomes,
robotic.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The Cytherians have reintegrated me.
And what is, you know, what is your favorite depiction of, you know, either robot, android, or cyborg within the Star Trek universe?
Well, mine's Data. I like the way that he's portrayed. I like that he's a constant on the show. So they've integrated completely an android onto their crew, which is very well done.
And from a purely aesthetic standpoint, going back to What Are Little Girls Made Of, it would have to be Andrea the android, the prettiest girl in the entire Star Trek canon.
Hmm. You mean?
Actually, I have to say, I mean, I've got a bunch of small kids, and they haven't been pushed onto Star Trek as much as I probably should have done yet. But we did manage to watch A Little Girl's Made Of maybe about 6 months ago or so. And the thing that I love about the original series, in the way, you know, in all its campiness. And all in all, it's very, like, I'm not going to say simple storytelling, but I think maybe innocent storytelling is what I mean. They were completely shocked when the final final twist was made in What a Little Girl's Made Of. They did not see that coming, and it's something that, you know, to think that something nearly 50 years old can capture the imagination like that still is, I think, is pretty good.
That's fantastic, right. Actually. Oh yeah.
But I will correct you. I don't think Andrea is the prettiest girl in Star Trek. I think that's Naomi Wildman.
Oh, well, okay. I'll let you have your opinion.
Okay, thanks. I mean, you know, she grows a horn as she gets older.
Well, doesn't she have multiple?
Yeah, she had two in the beginning, and then she had three when she was... A 3-year-old looking like a 12-year-old.
Yes, so, right.
Nah, I still think Naomi was the cutest thing in Star Trek. But anyway, that's a different story. Okay. What? Well, before...
It wasn't Roddenberry's wife. She's in everything.
Oh. You know, there were...
She's a good-looking older woman.
I was going to say, there are some episodes that she looks pretty damn hot in.
Right.
So, yes, that's true.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, then, since we were talking about Timescape and, you know... Honestly, guys, and I don't want to get sad on us, but I was really, really hoping to bring Brian on for the Android shows. But since you guys are doing the robotic shows, the Rusted Robot show, would you want to do some Android shows?
Of course.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, keep us in mind, and we'll communicate with you as we get closer to other Android data-centric episodes and see if you'd want to come on for them.
Yeah, you can count on us anytime.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Hopefully you had fun today. Obviously, we made you laugh. That's our goal.
Well, good job.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. So why don't you remind everybody before we get to the end of where you can be found?
All right. You can find us on our website, which is therustedrobot.podbean.com. You can find us in the iTunes store. We're on Twitter at The Rusted Robot. I'm on Twitter at Darth Vaderloo.
And I'm on Twitter at Brig Vanderloo.
Okay, then. And have you ever... This won't be out for 3 weeks, so nobody can snipe it from you, but have you ever thought about just getting therustedrobot.com and forwarding it to you, Podbean?
Actually, we do have that, but we don't know how to build websites.
Connect it together, yeah.
Oh, no, it's just a server thing. I mean, you just forward... who do you go through?
A Dreamhost.
Dreamhost. Maybe I could look into that, because, yeah, all you need to do is just forward the domain name to wherever you want it to go.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Simple
Cause,
thing.
Because we bought it, but then we never did anything with it, because we weren't sure what to do.
There you go. Dreamhost. I'm going to write that down, because I'll forget it in 2 minutes. Dreamhost. Yeah, I think it's DNS forward.
Oh.
So maybe I can get you... on how to do that. That way you can have your own domain. Okay.
That'd be one.
So, oh yeah, I got an email a couple weeks ago from a guy who wants to buy thebattlebridge.com.
Oh.
Yeah, he wants to do some kind of, I don't know, it sounds like a scam. I'm not doing it, because people who may know of it, when they go there next time, I don't want to take a chance that they're going to get a virus on their computer, so I'm not doing it.
No, you can't trust some people.
Nope. Okay, then. Thank you guys for coming on, but it's now time to give a rating to this episode. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the pack leads and 5 being the Nexus. I'm going to give this one, I think, this is going to come up to a 3. I think Wesley did a really good job. He tried his best, but nobody would listen to him. I do like Data episodes, data-centric. I like learning more about how he was constructed. I do like the crystalline entity, and I'm glad the crystalline entity will be back, even if it does kill Riker's squeeze for the episode.
Yes.
Sorry, that is a very bad spoiler alert there. But, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you've already seen it. You know what we're talking about. So we ain't spoiling anything. So in the end, I think it's probably going to be a good 3 out of 5. So what about you, Bridget?
I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Oh, Doc doesn't allow that.
He doesn't allow points?
No, he
did. No, I do. I actually don't trust them.
He doesn't trust them.
Boy, I'm going to round up.
Yeah, have
to. No, I'm not gonna
round up.
You're going to give it a 4.
I'm going to give it a 4. Because I like Data episodes, and it's like you said, I like that there was the history on how he was constructed, and you didn't have any of that before. So it's a history that is part of the show. It's part of him. Mm-hmm. I agree. Wes did a good job, even though they told him to shut up multiple times. His own mother did. Mm-hmm. But it was well done. I like seeing the range of Brent Spiner's acting. It's one of my favorite things.
Right. Okay. And Sean, how about you?
Well, I won't give it a 4 because that's like an 8. So I'll give it a 3 because that's more like a 6. So It's good in the fact that it introduced a whole bunch of stuff to the mythology of the Next Generation. It wasn't done very well, so I can't give it a 7 or an 8, but it's the first season, so I can't give it a 2.
Okay. You know, I do kind of feel silly on this rating of 1 to 5. I just went from Delta and Gamma. They both did 1 to 5, but it seems like everybody else does 1 to 10. And
that's what we do.
We do 1 to 10.
We do it out of 1 rivets. To 10 rivets, because the name of our Rusted Robot logo is Rivet. So
we give it rivets.
Rivets. Yeah. So that's 3 rivets and 4 rivets. I think James tried to get me to go to 1 to 10, but I was kind of set on 1 to 5 because that's all I'd ever heard. And then after, now I'm hearing 1 to 10 quite often. So, okay, James, how about you?
Okay, I like Data. I think Data's growing up, he was certainly my favorite character in Next Generation. He's the guy I identified with. I love all the Data-centric episodes. This is a Data-centric episode. We learn about, you know, how he was constructed and you know, his evil twin brother. I mean, who would have thought a twin brother would have been evil? He's only missing the goatee to, you know, all the cliches. It's a relatively simplistic story. We're still very much in early TNG territory, and there's not a huge amount that really we can kind of project onto Data in a way that we would later do in things like Measure of a Man, The Offspring, Data's Day, things like that, where the story might be about Data, but in reality it's something a lot deeper. In this case, the story is pretty shallow, but it is about Data. I have to say, though, that I still like the episode. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I think it's probably my second or maybe third favorite episode of the initial season. And I think it's a good one.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
There are survivors from the Odin on this planet.
The rescue team struggles to find a shipwrecked crew.
These people are facing their death down here.
Because they're fugitives on Angel One.
We were no harm to anyone.
And a disease-infested Enterprise can't save them.
No one can beam up. This virus is totally out of control here.
Now the crew is helpless to stop an execution on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay, well, I'd like to once again thank Sean and Bridget for joining us on this episode of The Battle Bridge. Join us next week as we review Angel One. I'm James from London.
Sean from Porcupine.
Bridget from Porcupine.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. This one was for you, Baker. God bless. Good night.